You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It is the Anfield Wrap. I am Neil Atkinson, and with me I've got John Gibbons, who is behind the screen like we are indeed contestants in Blind Date. One for the teenagers there. I've got Andy Bell and I've got Philippa Smallwood. We will find out where John would like to go for his favourite possible date with me. Maybe at the end of the show, it's something for everybody to look forward to. What would his ideal night out be in those scenarios? But before then, what we're going to talk about is what we think the job is for Liverpool Football Club moving into next season. And simultaneously talk about a number of players who could have a bigger part to play. For instance, Kai Havertz, who has obviously performed now for Germany in this tournament and scores the winner in the Champions League final as well. But it is the question, I think, Philippa, is what is the bar? Where is the bar? And I think it's difficult to tell now looking back into last season, because City end up with 86 points and there's a lot of people saying, oh, when they conceded only three fewer and everyone's raving about Diaz and all of that sort of stuff. They end up with 86 points at the end of the campaign. For me, there is a thing there where they go on a run that was a 100-point run. They show the capability of doing that, but it's in the COVID environment. What do you think Liverpool will think they need to do to be able to, at the very least, take trying to win the league until the last game of the season?
I think probably 90.
So you think 90?
I think 90, but I think that it kind of simplifies things if you say you need 100 and you say just try and win every single game. Like, don't do what, you know, teams used to do in like the 2000s, where it used to be, if you go to Chelsea and you get a draw, it's fine. You know, you can pick up the points elsewhere. I think if you just treat every single game like you have to win it, it kind of just simplifies everything. And I think that was kind of a little bit of a trap that maybe we fell into last season. Because we won it at such a canter the year before, it was almost like we don't need to win every game. And in effect, I think that kind of takes you intensity out of some games in a way. You know, because we missed out by a point the year before, it was like we treated every game like you had to go out there and you had to beat everyone and get the 3 points, because otherwise City would take advantage of any point that you dropped. And I think we need to kind of take that attitude into the next season, and do exactly the same as what we did 2 years ago. And hopefully next season it'll be easier to treat it like that, because you won't have all the COVID scenario, you won't have games being crammed into smaller, you know, time periods, you know, because whatever anybody says, it is really, really hard when you're just having to go again twice a week, every single week. It's just a really difficult thing to do.
It seems to me, Andy, as though we can lose our way a little bit in what's required and what isn't around looking at where things end up. So, for instance, as Philip has sort of alluded to there, the previous season Manchester City get 81 points. This season they get 86. So they've only really gone up by 5 points, theoretically. But they win the league by a bit of a distance. And for me, the most telling period, and I think that this is now where Premier League football is and has been since Leicester last won it, is there's got to be a run, at least one that you put in over the season, that suggests if you needed to, you could get more than 100. That's what I think. I don't think there's any, I don't, that therefore doesn't mean you need to get more than 100, but there needs to be a point where everyone's going, these characters might just win every game for the rest of the season if they need to.
Yeah, and I think that's what I was thinking in the first half of last season when we were actually still doing very well for 2 or 3 months after the Van Dijk injury. It was like Man City were dropping points left, right and centre. I think the first time they really looked like champions is when they go to Chelsea and win 3-1 in that game where they're 3-0 up at half time and De Bruyne is just like absolutely unplayable as he was for a lot of last season. So I remember thinking, even though we were top of the league by 2, 3, 4 points at certain times around November and December, I thought, you know, City do have this, as you say, 100-point run in them. And I just felt as though we weren't taking advantage of that quite enough. I think Liverpool are in an interesting position now because two seasons ago when we got 100 points and we walked the league, I think you see a very different Liverpool to what we saw certainly early days under Jurgen Klopp and even like 17, 18, 18, 19 in the sense that we had so much control over games. You couldn't really press the opposition because they just didn't want the ball and they were just lashing it, long. And the teams were happy to come to Anfield and take a 2-0. There were so many times you rocked up on a Saturday afternoon to Anfield. Watford at home's a prime example, and teams were happy to get away with a 2-0. And I think that's why you see Thiago come in last season, because he's, you know, spent most of his career with 80, 90% possession playing under Pep Guardiola. And then to bring him into a side where, you know, it's a bit more high intensity. Fabinho and Henderson, they're not only two of the best midfielders in the league, they're two of the best athletes in the league as well. You know, and Thiago missing them in the midfield, kind of having to leg it about, which he's not really used to, and I think he became a lot more used to towards the end of the season, didn't really suit him at the start. So you're in an interesting scenario where, in terms of like getting, you know, going on a run where you can get 100 points, do you see that from Liverpool towards the end of last season, the last 10 games really, where we win it and we draw two. So we worked out a way. It took us a while in the second half of 2021, but we worked out a way to actually go on a 100-point run with that team. Now, obviously, we're going to have our team from 2 seasons ago back next season, so it'll be interesting just to see if we can pick up from there, and if we find a way where whichever personnel is on the pitch, within reason, we can go on one of these runs. And I think Philip mentions 90 points would do it, but we should be in the mindset if we need 100. I think between 90 and 95 we'll do it. I think that City will get somewhere in between there, 92, 93, maybe 94. And I think if we if we're able to pick up from that and transition from what we saw towards the end of last season and transition that back into what we saw 2 years ago, I think we'll be on for in the 90s quite easily.
I think we'll be on for around there, John, but it is that sort of that mindset question. For me, I think that there is a little bit of... I think the football world could also... The English football world could also almost do with some normality, and so therefore they try to sort of will it into being. I do wonder whether or not we do end up seeing a season that's got a lot of similarities to something like 18-19. If you remember that one, Chelsea start pretty strongly. After about 10 games, we go to Stamford Bridge. There's the late Sturridge equaliser. That felt like a huge goal at the time, and so it proved. Chelsea then begin to sort of not be able to hit the pace with Liverpool. Liverpool peak around December. The dodgy then January, and then Liverpool and City finish really strongly. And it's, in a sense, the best title race ever, but it's also the worst one, in that everybody won every week. There was no drama. And I think that remains something. I feel like people are trying to sort of will that into being, whereas I do wonder whether or not something like that, maybe with a bit more Chelsea, is what we need to be preparing for.
Yeah, it's really hard, isn't it? It's really difficult. And I was listening to Philippa before, and, you know, talking about the idea of how we went into 1920, which was the idea you win every game, and how that was a clear message, and how that was, you know, beneficial to this team. And I completely agree with everything that she said, but there is a risk to that, in that, well, what happens if you get beat? So if you go in out to your squad and tell them they've got to win every game, well, what if we lose to Chelsea third game of the season? Or we're on 7 points, and then we go to Leeds and we get beat at Leeds United because, you know, they've full house the rabbit, you know, all that sort of thing, and you know, they're a good team and they do, yeah. And I think that's the problem, isn't it? Is that if you're telling your team, yeah, send your team out and telling them all summer, you know, that it's 100 points, it's winning every game, it's mad, and if you stutter a little bit, how do you sort of change that message? And I think that's always the risk, isn't it? And look, there's risks either way. You know, I'm not saying we can, Klopp wants to sit them down in the summer and say, okay, well, we're right to lose 5 games, because as you say, then everyone's like, oh, okay, well, you know, it doesn't really matter if we get beat at Leeds, you know what I mean? And so, you know, I'm not saying they necessarily think that, but it's difficult. It is tough, and Klopp, you know, would have done that message in the summer because he believed it was right and the only way. So how do you follow up a season where you get 97 points and don't win the league is by going better, and so he felt, well, this is what I have to say, and this is also feels like it's the truth, to be honest with you, because it did then, and so we went in with that mindset this time. he's probably less confident that it's the truth, and then so that, you know, you start the doubts on that sort of policy, if you like, you know, start sort of creeping in into your mind. I think, sorry, were you trying to get in there?
I was just gonna say I wonder if there's a thing where it's, you need to always be on the verge of winning 10 on the bounce.
Yeah.
If you see what I mean. I wonder if that's the mentality, that you're not always going to win 10 on the bounce, but you need to be on the verge of winning 10 on the bounce. You need to always be on the verge of going on the run.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't surprise me if next season, genuinely see how the fixtures fall, because it does have an impact, but it genuinely wouldn't surprise me if all of Liverpool, City and Chelsea all manage to do the run at some point. Mm. And that's when it does get terrifying, because you might, you know, because when we're stuttering, City might be on their run, at which point then every drop point feels even more magnified and even more in focus. But then the flip side is, if you feel as though, put up money, boys, there will come a point where we take 33 out of 33. Yeah. And I think that's a really difficult message, I'd say, because normally what happens in these things, and it's not always the case, but normally what happens is whoever gets on the run first breaks the spirit of everybody else. Chelsea under Conte as an example.
Yeah, and that's why I think if you offer Klopp now touching distance 1st of March, he'd take it. And by touching distance, I mean, you know, maybe Liverpool are 2 points ahead, or maybe Liverpool are 2 points behind. But it's, you know, it's a capability of, you know, go on a proper run here and you probably win it. I think he'd bite your hand off. Also, because I think Pep would probably be a bit nervous about that. Like, as in, you know, look, you mentioned 18 and 19, they do it in that season, they go on the great one. So I'm not saying they're not capable, but I think Pep Guardiola's preference is always blow everyone out the water, you know, early, and then be able to, you know, even shift your focus to the Champions League a little bit. I think that's how he would sort of, that's how anyone would rather win the league one day, you know, but I think that's how he sort of plans his season, you know, almost. So I think, you know, I think Tuchel would take touching distance 1st of March, and I think Klopp would bite your hand off for it. And I think part of the reason for that is what you said before, Neil, is that, you know, we can't say, you know, oh, last season was the mad season, but this year we'll go back to sort of normal, because we don't know what next season's going to look like. There's the African Cup of Nations thrown in there as well. There's the Olympics, and they keep seeing these mad squads. So one the other day that Alisson was in, I was like, someone's having a laugh here. I was reassured by the Brazilians that this is just a mad thing they do, and he won't be going. So that was nice. But generally speaking, there's all these other things. And then also, it's obviously the COVID thing. There's obviously the fact that, you know, players are still being asked to train in slightly unusual situations. There's the idea of, you know, life isn't just back to normal, even if we want to will it to be in or want it to be in. And so, but I think by next March, you know, I think the idea of being in a situation where we're able to go, okay, if we can just get to then in a really good position, then I'm confident that we can go on a run to win the title. And so I think that'll be the aim of the football club. I think that's what they'll be talking about. I think that is a message you can give over to the squad, is that, okay, we're after the title challenge. Let's focus, you know, turn of the year or whatever it is, or going into spring. Ferguson used to say Easter, didn't he? You know,
depends when Easter falls. Well,
I mean, you know, that's a whole other debate. I think it's wild what they do with Easter, to be honest.
I think Ferguson used to decide when Easter was. up there with the fixture computer.
Maybe he did. There should be stronger Easter rules for me. But you know, we can't get into that. But I think that's what Klopp will be aiming for, and I think that's why he'd probably be saying something like to the squad.
Quickly, the only game in town is trying to win the thing, and we're all as one on that. So therefore, that's why it is how you go about that. The other part within this, Andy, is we're now on. Effectively two seasons of the last three, where it was English side versus English side in the Champions League final. You can, you know, there's bits and pieces where I still think Tottenham's run was nice, to be quite honest with you. Yes, they had to beat City. That wasn't nice. But the point is that the English opponent to Liverpool's run was nice. You know, we had Bayern Munich and Barcelona going through ours as well, with the usual sort of Porto involvement. They ended up with what they ended up with. But, you know, I do sort of look around and think that this is what we're also getting set up for. What we also need to get set up for is the idea that this isn't just about going deep into the league and taking that to the last game of the season. It's that simultaneously, a la 18-19, you're also trying to go all the way in Europe. And that's what I think this squad, those players, that manager will want, will deserve. But it's also why we pay out the wage budget we pay out.
Yeah, definitely. And listen, you know, you talk about you know, the likes of Mo Salah and Sadio Mane. You ask us 2 seasons ago, and we obviously say we'd rather win the league because we hadn't. Well, a lot of us hadn't seen us win the league in our lifetimes. Me certainly. But I think you ask Salah and Mane and players like that, of those, you know, those elite mindset players, and they'll say the European Cup all day long, and that's the one, because that's you've got your 2 games where you have to perform. You have to perform in that game, and you can have a bad week in the league and grind out a result, or take a draw here and there, depending on, you know, what points total you need. But it's a bit, the European Cup's just always mad to predict, because if you hit a decent team in a period of form in the league where you're not doing so well, you can find yourself out. And, you know, if we'd have played Atletico Madrid 2 years ago, in the first half of the season, I'm sure we would have beaten them. I'm absolutely sure we would have. In terms of like last season with the Champions League, I think it's no surprise. You know, a lot of people were very annoyed and kind of making judgments about the 4 teams that were in the European Cup semi-finals, and them all kind of being the teams who have quote unquote ruined football in the last few years. But I think it's, you know, teams like that who don't really have the soul, who don't really have the heart and passion and city, like for example Liverpool behind them, or even Manchester. You know, it's, for me, the way I saw it was you put robotic teams like Manchester City in a robotic environment, and they're going to thrive because external factors are taken out, and you know, there's no fans there to. One thing I always remember when we played Man City in January, every time we've played Man City at Anfield, when we've been pressing, they've looked absolutely terrified. Whereas when we were pressing them in January, we looked like the ones that were terrified that they were going to play through us. And I think that's all the crowd, and I think that's going to play a massive factor in it. So it's very difficult. You know, you look at the climate of the European leagues at the moment. You've obviously got La Liga, which looks very weak. I think, you know, obviously Atletico win it last season, they probably are the best of the three, but Real Madrid have won it the last few years while not being very good at all and not really showing that in Europe. Even the team this year that knocked us out, you know, you read about what things coming out of the camp, and the players are quite annoyed because they thought that Real Madrid weren't a particularly good side, and you know, we probably shouldn't have gone out in that game. And obviously you've got the stuff in Ligue 1, and PSG are in a bit of a crisis right now because of what's happened with the TV deal over there. 3 of the last 10 years they've lost the league title to teams who should be nowhere near the league. You've got Montpellier, I think 10 years ago, Monaco, and then Lille this year. So, you know, for them to be doing that, you can't afford to do that if you're kind of bottling as much as what they are in the European Cup. So it's just impossible, really. You know, I think it's even impossible to predict teams in the Premier League and how good they're going to be. There's so many instances over the last sort of 5-10 years where teams kind of come up out of nowhere. They've been riding the crest of a wave, and they've kind of done well, and it's impossible to kind of predict who that team's going to be. And Thomas Tuchel and Chelsea are an interesting one, because what everyone says about him is his big problem is his man management, and he kind of hasn't had the time to do everyone's head in yet at Chelsea, you know what I mean? So they've been right. Well, it's more than the crest of a wave at Chelsea because they've been going on this incredible run since November, but it'll be interesting to see next season if they do have like a tricky month, and they do hit the bumps in the road, whether cracks do begin to appear mentally as well as with the footballers on that side. So yeah, there's so much up in the air, and I'm just looking forward to it, to be honest.
I'm looking forward to it, Philip, but I think it's right what Andy says there. But I think for Liverpool, given, you know, you go through the ages of the squad, and you can rightly see it as a negative, as an issue, as a question mark. But the flip side is, you know, if you are Mo Salah especially, but also Fabinho, you know, Fabinho's turning 28, you know, Thiago's 30 going on 31, Henderson similar. You've got maybe 3 more goes at winning the big cup. They will want league championships as well within there, don't get me wrong, and I think they'd love to win the whole thing in front of fans and have that adventure all together. I think that is still an emotional driver for Liverpool, but the point is, they are now all in win now mode. And the manager doesn't get to pick and choose between the 2 big competitions. He might get to pick and choose on the FA Cup, and he might get to pick and choose on the League Cup. But he can't say to those players, we're just going for the title, nor can he say to them, we're just going for the European Cup. They have to be built for both.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think that's probably where we suffered quite a bit, you know, with the injuries that we had last season. You know, the fact that we weren't able to swap and change players, as maybe we would have liked to have done. And, you know, I know if Van Dijk was fit, you know, he played every game, I think, the season before, pretty much apart from the League Cup. So, you know, he would probably ask to do the same last season. But, you know, you wouldn't have had Gomez playing every game, for example. You wouldn't have had Matic playing every game. You know, the fact that Thiago hasn't been able to play with the first choice team apart from, I think, 11 minutes, I think somebody said in the Everton game or something. It's just absolutely crazy for me. And I think my biggest concern, I think, about whether or not we can achieve both next season or get one of the big ones is, you know, how our players come back from these serious injuries. You know, I know we're getting Konate in, but for me, he will take time to settle as well. You know, he's not an experienced player in a sense. He's still yeah. young. You know, we know that the players that we had playing at the back last season were limited in their capabilities. They did everything that they possibly could for us, but you know that that's as good as they're probably going to ever be able to perform for us. So we need that extra level. And like I say, my concern is whether or not, you know, Van Dijk, Gomez, even Matic, because it's a fairly serious injury that Matic's had as well, whether or not they can come back in at the same level as what they were before they got injured. And we might need to be prepared that, you know, they're not going to be able to play every game, you know, like Van Dijk used to do. You know, he might have to come in and out a little bit more than what we were prepared for previously. But I find it interesting, really, with Man City, because there's a lot of noise around them changing quite a lot of their squad this summer. And I think that's an admittance more from Guardiola that he doesn't feel that those players are capable of winning in the Champions League. Because he's tried now for, is it four seasons with them? And I think he's saying, I don't think these quite are good enough to be able to get us over the line in the Champions League, and I need more. I need some better players than what I've had. And I find that quite surprising, really, with how dominant they've been over 3 or 4 years in the Premier League.
John, I think for us, I'll come back onto City in a second, for us, therefore, this is where, when we are thinking about what this team needs to do, one of those things, it comes back to the conversation around what the numbers are in terms of the numbers of players and in what area. And that still, to me, remains the Liverpool summer question mark. The Neuhaus links aren't going anywhere at the moment, and that's all right. You know, I think that we'd all like to see another midfielder. But then beyond that, you know, this is a club that is, theoretically, looking at moving on Shaqiri, looking at moving on Origi, possibly looking at moving on Minamino, as and when that sort of comes to pass. Within there as well, there's other names that are linked away, and you get the impression Liverpool wouldn't be averse to it, but someone's got to play the football matches, someone's got to be on the bench, someone's got to be involved, and I'm just worried that Liverpool may, as ever, find their way through to being one or two light. The problem I've got with that is I can't sit here right now and say, but this is where I think we'll be one or two light, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, me and you recorded some videos, didn't we, called The Squad, which are going to be going out over the next couple of weeks on our video subscription service. And it was an interesting experiment. I hope it's interesting for people to listen to or watch. But it was certainly interesting for me to do in terms of looking at the squad sort of area by area. And you know, you soon get into the sort of realization, if you like, of well, there's numbers everywhere, but do you have everyone that you want to do each sort of specific job that a sort of squad needs? And so, you know, if you might say for midfielders, you know, in theory we have enough midfielders, but you know, have we got enough to A, stay fit, and B, to play in each of those positions we want? And so, you know, the base of the midfield, for example, has lost someone in Wijnaldum who did play as a six, and you might say, well, I didn't really like him there or whatever, but the point is he did play games for Liverpool there. And so, you know, even if you keep our midfielders fit more next season, you know, you've still got, I'd say, more midfielders who like looking forward than maybe ones who like covering centre halves and fullbacks, and so, you know, and it's similar. So it's maybe for forward positions, you know, even if you like Origi, or even if you like Minamino, or even if you're expecting loads from Harvey Elliott, you know, have you got enough forward options who really enjoy playing as a number nine, who really want to do that? And so, you know, it isn't just about numbers, I guess, is what I'm saying. It's about what do we need from different people in the squad, and do we have the combination of skills and combination of talents needed, you know, if someone is to drop out, or if we're a little bit unlucky with injuries with one or two players. And I think that's what, you know, Jürgen and the team, Michael Edwards, will be looking at the moment is different eventualities, different ways that they want to play, and they might have something up the sleeve this summer in terms of a slight change. You know, this team has evolved. You know, people get a bit lazy when they talk about a Jürgen Klopp side. You know, I've seen this squad and this team and the style evolve over time, really. And I think Pep Linders has been sort of central to that, but also Jürgen himself wanting to learn, and also Jürgen himself wanting to keep the opposition managers guessing. And so they might have some formation tweaks or some little things that they'd like to sort of do a bit differently, and do we have the sort of to players for that? So I don't think it's as, I guess what I'm saying is, I don't think it's quite as easy as saying, well, we normally play with three forwards, so we need this many. I think it's do we have the forward options, you know, to play the way we want, but also to complement each other and to do sort of different jobs within each of the positions that we need.
Just come back to you quick, John, on the you mentioned there about sort of who's doing what and that aspect of it. You know, when Alden last season gets over 3,000 minutes for Liverpool, and Milner gets over 1,200. And my point here is that you want, obviously now you've lost Wijnaldum. And whilst if James Milner was sat in this room and had hold of a microphone, he would argue with the premise of the thing I'm about to say. But you surely want James Milner to be playing less going into next season than he does going into this. So you can have the line about Curtis Jones, but Curtis might just take some of Milner's minutes, if you sort of see what I mean. You end up in a situation, I think, where when you look at who did what in midfield last season, it's difficult to sort of make up one or two bits solely with one player. It is Chamberlain, it is Keita, but it is probably also the extra body. My only line on this is that I think that Liverpool should be looking to replace Henderson, not looking to replace Wijnaldum. That the footballer, the profile of the football they should be looking for should be a Jordan Henderson-esque figure more than a Gini Wijnaldum one. But regardless, someone's got to play centre midfield for Liverpool.
Yeah, and someone's got to play at the base, and someone's got to, you know, play high up or whoever it is you want to play, you know, whether it's a flat three or whether it's a 2-1 or 1-2, you need players to play in all those positions. And one of the reasons Wijnaldum plays so many minutes was because, not just because he's fit all the time, but because he was so versatile and so he could do different things. And that's why, you know, I think that you can't just, you know, offer me a more fit Naby Keita or a more fit Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain next season and say, oh, well, we'll be fine then, because they can't necessarily do the same jobs. And so I think Henderson, you know, is the one for me that they should be looking at in terms of looking to, you know, a similar sort of player to him is someone who I'd be looking for the midfield option, someone who can play as a six or someone who is happy, you know, if we say we go 4-2-3-1 to play there, but maybe, you know, but not necessarily a Fabinho, not necessarily someone who's, you know, who is sort of more of a sitter, albeit that's sort of damning Fabinho a little bit because obviously his passion range is sublime. But the idea of someone who could sort of sit there, you know, we're hoping more often than not that is Fabinho next season, and if not, sort of Henderson can sort of do a job there. So it needs to be someone who can be, you know, complement Fabinho, you know, as much as possible, sort of in a starting 11. And I think Wijnaldum sort of could do that amongst many, many other things. And so I think that the idea of, you know, if we're linked with midfielders and I was asking, you know, as we often do, we'll ring up sort of journalists and fans of these clubs to say, what do you like? If they're saying to me he's a lot like Jordan Henderson, I'm very pleased.
It's on the Neuhaus question. It does look as though it is determination from Liverpool. It looks as though there is something that is serious there, Philippa. As I say, looking at him, looking at the sort of range that he's got, the idea that he's got a few goals in him. It is a range of passing question. He doesn't seem to be quite as what's the word I'm looking for here? He's not the sort of the clear obvious sitter, nor is he the clear obvious sort of 10. He does have a little bit of an 8 aspect in him, but also more stuff around being able to be bits and pieces of a 6, deep line playmaker, sends the ball, all of that sort of stuff. For me, he feels, when John goes through his, you don't just want the player, you don't just want another body, you need to sort of have a sense of where that is. If Liverpool are going to continue with 4-3-3, a lad who is 6/8 to me feels smarter than a lad who is 8/10.
I'd agree. But I think that when we got Gini Wijnaldum in, I didn't expect him to play as he played for us.
Yeah.
And fair. I think that is something that Michael Edwards and Klopp are really, really good at identifying, is a player who can play the system and the way that they want to play. And, you know, maybe he can play in several different positions. You know, I'm no expert on any player that we're after, basically. And I just think that they've... they've done enough to show us that they identify the right sort of players that we require, that's going to fit within our system and play in the way that they want to play. And I think John's right. You know, for all we know, they might be looking at tweaking the system that they're playing as well, because I think that's one way of surprising teams next season as well. You know, if they have got used to the way that we play and, you know, the system that we use and how we go about our games, you know, 80% of the time, for example, if we can come up with a different, slightly different way of, you know, playing these games, then maybe other teams will struggle to get to grips with us at the start of the season.
On the what are you looking for across the defence question, Andy, I still feel as though there are a couple more questions than answers. Both the cover fullbacks, for instance, perfectly reasonable to be subject to questions. But Philip made the point earlier on about where Liverpool's centre-halves will be as and when they return. And even there, I'm looking, thinking, could just be one light, even with the Konate purchase. You know, Gomez, Matip and Van Dijk, I think Liverpool may well just be one light. There is Nat Phillips, he's still around, linked away a couple of times. There is also Ben Davies, who Liverpool are at least briefing that they're interested in doing something with. It wouldn't surprise me if that was true of either Phillips or Davies, in that the good thing about them is they're both down as homegrown footballers. But it would seem unlikely, at least, that Davies suddenly comes in and is starting the first league game of the season against Norwich, as far as I can see. You know, I can't quite see how that happens. I do worry that Liverpool are one light if they are going to be stressed by the players returning from injuries and stressed from the fact that there will be a Champions League group that will need getting out of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's interesting. There was a piece by James Pearson, The Athletic, a couple of weeks ago, which kind of had a lot of insight into the squad and how Jurgen's thinking. And one of the things they said was that they see Ben Davies and that Robertson Fabinho mould of somebody who needed 3 or 4 months to kind of get used to the physical side of things and how to play like a Liverpool defender. So who knows? Listen, you know, it's a bit of a hard one to predict.
You'd be shocked, though, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I'd be surprised, but in the sense that, like, it's, you know, it's difficult to predict, because Jurgen kind of talked about when he came in, we wouldn't usually look to the Championship to sign a defender. Now they're kind of talking about whether, you know, he'll be physically ready for this season. So yeah, he's going to be kind of in and around the fifth, sixth, whatever choice where Nat Phillips is. I think what Philippa says about the players coming back and where they're at is just the absolute key element to all of this, because if they're able to look at the sports science and they see that Van Dijk is, you know, this was just one horror injury, he's absolutely right now, and he's going to go back to being this player who's just perpetually available for us every week, we can even throw him in the League Cup games and FA Cup games like we did at times, then, you know, I think you're looking at being absolutely fine at centre-half. As I say, like, there's been a lot of chat recently across, you know, Liverpool Twitter and the subscribers group about, you know, who's going to be the fifth or sixth choice, because we've relied on them so heavily this season. But the question I'd say to that is, when Van Dijk was in this 2 or 3 year run where he was fit every week and he was playing every week, how many times did we see our fifth or sixth choice playing a Premier League game? It wasn't at all. You'd be surprised to see Lovren come in at times. That's kind of as far as it got. And that's with injury-prone centre-halves like Gomez and like Matip. Obviously, we've added Konate into that. We don't know how, you know, whether his injuries over the last few years are going to be something that's going to kind of be a theme throughout his career, or just a bit of bad luck. So I don't know. I think I'm sitting here and I'm happy enough with Konate at the back. As I say, Liverpool know more about the sports science than what we do. It could be one of those even where, you know, there's no sports science answer on it. We don't know. It's, you know, it's never really happened before. He's never really had this bad injury since he's been at Liverpool, and we don't know whether he's going to have another bad one. But I think it's a case of you can't avert all potential risk in the sense that you can't have a plan for, like, Salah, Mane, Jota being all injured at the same time. You know, some of these things are going to happen, and if they happen, it's, you know, a one in 20 years kind of thing that happens, and you can't really account for it. And I think that's the case at the back. You know, you can sign two more centre halves. What if all six of them get injured? You know, that's theoretically possible as well. So there's a point where they say, listen, I have to take some sort of a risk here with it. And, you know, of course Van Dijk could get injured for the season again and we could be fucked again. But it's, you know, that's going to happen to anyone. So, and just to stay quick on the fullbacks, I think you know, it all depends on what they've seen from Tsimikas. I still think Nico Williams is a very good backup right back. I watched him in a couple of friendlies for Wales. I know he got sent off against France very unluckily, but he looked very, very good in that kind of right midfield position. And he looked like one of their better technical players and, you know, was able to whip balls in and just looked very good and looked to me like a player who's developed. And obviously, he's been through the ringer at times at the start of last season, wasn't really trusted after that. But I'm happy enough, you know, if you told me Nico Williams and Tsimikas back up fullback during the next season, I'm fine with that, to be honest. We'll get another look at those two and see what they're made of.
My other part on the Davies question, we can talk about Tsimikas, John. He only plays 11 Premier League minutes. The thing I do wonder, I still remember seeing certain Liverpool sides at times going back two, three seasons where Clavin would pop up and do a little bit at left back here and there. It never looked nice, if I'm frank. It looked very unwieldy. But I do wonder whether or not with him, I would be almost, it's a strange thing to say, I would be almost less surprised to see him possibly appear as a slightly more conservative left back in a back four than to see him suddenly start to get games at centre-half. Now, maybe come pre-season, you know, I'll be very much shown that the manager views him solely as a central defender. But I do wonder whether or not Liverpool might just sort of think to themselves, if we can have a fifth choice centre half here who can do is a little bit at left back in League Cup games, come off the bench here and there, still use Milner a little bit at left back for at least a season or so. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but there have been a couple of links away of Tsimikas in the last 48 hours or so. I do wonder whether or not when Andy's making the point there that you've got to take a risk somewhere, if that might be a risk that Liverpool feel as though they are prepared to take.
Yeah, perhaps. I think it's an interesting one, and I think, look, he won't be the first, you know, centre-half who gets minutes of full-back before they're fully trusted, you know. I mean, it's, even at Liverpool, you know, we've seen that sort of countless times, really. You know, Joe Gomez, the other side, yeah, who might play, you know, a bit of right-back next season as well. I'd be surprised if he doesn't, you know, play, you know, at least a few games there. But he's someone, you know, I mean, he started as a left-back, actually, didn't he?
Yeah.
And then gets sort of shifted to the other side and now is a sort of established centre-half. Obviously, Carragher plays both sides as well before ended up in a centre-back. So I think a defender that you like, but either don't completely trust right at the moment as a centre-back or there's just someone ahead of him. You know, getting the games at full-back first has been, you know, a time-honoured tradition, isn't it? You know, in football. And so it is possible. It certainly is possible. And, you know, he looks a more natural fullback than Clavin, you know, from what I've seen, which albeit is only sort of Benil Preston highlights at the moment. You know, he has got a bit of pace about him. Obviously, his passing range is good, you know, crossing and things like that I've not seen. And listen, you wouldn't want him necessarily, you know, playing every week there or even necessarily a run, but someone you're able to use there in certain games, you know, possibly there is. And that might be why that they are thinking about him, you know, a little bit more than what people would expect. And, you know, we have to believe the stuff some sort of coming out the club, really, which is, you know, we'll know that actually they haven't sort of given up on him. You know, it's been very much an injuries thing as much as anything, but also a circumstance thing, really, with him. And I think there's a bit of that with Tsimikas as well. You know, be interested if they do trust him a little bit more when either the centre halves are a bit more established or the stakes in the games, you know, aren't sort of quite as high as what they ended up sort of being, you know, at times last season. So yeah, it's an option for him, and if it's a way of him getting minutes, then obviously better for him as well.
On therefore, Philippa, I would like to see them. So ultimately, I feel at the moment as though Liverpool, I would be surprised, could be wrong, and it's not off the basis of any inside knowledge, I hasten to add to anyone listening. I'd be surprised if Liverpool don't sign Neuhaus close to the end of Germany's involvement in the Euros, phrase it that way. And then I think Liverpool's next purchase after that will possibly be dictated to by what the sales are, where the sales are and what the sales are. So the idea of how much money there is to spend, I think Grubich will almost certainly be going. Wilson will almost certainly be going, and I think Liverpool will take any fee that they can. But then within there as well, does an offer come in for Tsimikas? Is there a generous loan offer for Nico Williams? Up front, can they get what they want for Origi, for Shaqiri, and possibly for Minamino? I think that Liverpool will almost go, we need another one of those midfielder lads. We got the other one of the centre-half lads. We put the money in on that. That's gone. And then it'll be, all right, let's see what comes in to see if we flip it. For me, that remains the key question then. I expect Liverpool, effectively what I'm saying is I expect Liverpool to do two more. One of them to be a midfielder, like Neuhaus, if not him. But then for it to be all about what goes out and then Liverpool will assess what they can get for what comes in. Do you think that's fair?
I think it is fair. I don't think there's anywhere that we're desperately in need of somebody, in my opinion. I think you're right. I think I'd be surprised if all three of Origi, Shaqiri and Minamino go. That would be a surprise to me.
Would you be surprised from that from a Liverpool point of view, or just they won't get the offers for all three that they'd want to accept?
I think it'd be difficult to get offers for all three, but I also think that from Liverpool's point of view that they wouldn't want to. I think if they lost all three, they would need to replace two of them.
Okay. Even with maybe Elliot?
I think Elliot will go back out on loan.
Okay.
I think that they'll want him to get more money.
I do, yeah. Go on.
I think that if all three go, that's the way that they'll look at it. If they keep one of them, then they only need to replace one.
Yeah.
And therefore, it won't be as much of an upheaval, so to speak, with the squad. I don't expect Elliot to stay next season, and that's just me being like, you know, I think they get more benefit from him having a full season in, even if it's like a lower Premier League side, because I think that is an option for next season, or a Championship side. I think that they've got the option there that he will get minutes and develop that way rather than sitting on our bench and maybe getting 20 minutes here or there. And I think long term we will benefit a lot more from that as well. And if I was Liverpool, that's what I'd be looking at anyway. I would be open to all three going, but I don't think it's necessarily what will happen. But I expect, I do think Tsimikas might go. And I think that's just more down to the fact that maybe he's not really shown what we wanted him to, but also because people are coming in who are willing to pay what we paid for him. And maybe we feel now that we've got other options that we can use in that position. I mean, it took Klopp a long time, didn't it, really, to decide that he wanted to get a backup left back anyway. But also, has Bertrand got a new club yet?
I don't think he has, no.
Because I was wondering if, you know, like maybe they look at something like that where they go, you know, it's another homegrown player that, you know, can take away that kind of issue with the squad, and maybe he could come in as like a backup left back, you know, for how many minutes that they get to play, unless Robertson gets injured, you know, you don't see them playing an awful lot anyway. So
just to come back to the Elliot thing, so you think Elliot will go on loan as well?
Yeah, I think it's 1 year. I think it's 1 year too early for Harvey Elliott. I think you saw like last season he produced some serious quality for Blackpool in the Championship. Was one of their best players. One of their best players. Fans absolutely loved him, but there was a period just after Christmas where he was on the bench for a month or two and was maybe struggling a little bit in his first season in senior football, I think it is. And I think, you know, he's somebody who's going to be a massive player for us going forward. But this year, I'd keep Shaqiri around kind of as your sixth. I think it's crucial that we add another one purely because of the, if he's looking to play all four of them, then I don't think you can just have the four you can hang your hat on, because one of them's going to get injured at one point. Who are you going to put in then? So I think, you know, you always say it, Neil, you know, Ferguson used to always buy strikers or forward players because you can always sell them. You were looking at potentially getting 20 million for Origi or things like that.
It's a different time now, though, because yeah. One of the things on that, for instance, I think Shaqiri's a good example of it. So Shaqiri's reputedly on about 80 grand a week. He's still got 2 years left on his deal. We couldn't sell him last summer. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I think the line on that is now just a little bit different, because if they're going to come in and play for Liverpool, they're going to get a degree of a Liverpool-esque contract, even though we know we're more sort of bonus-based than other teams, etc., etc. Like, for instance, I don't know who or how Liverpool sell Jadon Shaqiri to this transfer window, for instance.
He nearly went last summer, didn't he? It's never come out to who it was. I'd just be interested, really, to see who it was, really, what level of club it was. And it was never particularly clear, who it was, or B, sort of why it broke down. But he did very nearly go, didn't he, at the end. So whether it's just, you know, his mindset's changed a little bit more from last season might be another factor as well.
Yeah. You keep Elliot?
I, I'd make a late decision on him. I think I sort of had it in my head that he would be a Liverpool player next season, and then Philippa and Andy have got in my head and a little bit about it, and I was like, maybe not. It should be nice for him. Do you know what I mean? I mean, they've sold Buendia, so haven't they? Felt like they obviously had to, and maybe there's a little bit of a gap there. I think he would sort of get minutes, but is there a benefit of the problem with going to a lower Premier League club is he getting beat more often than not, and so how much of the ball is he seeing?
What's around and when he picks it up?
Yeah, exactly. And so is the, you know, I mean, it'll be tough for him, and that's not necessarily a bad thing really, but at least with someone like Norwich, you know, they're playing football and things like that, and you know, German manager, if you want to be sort of lazy about it, and so there's that sort of thing really. But I don't know, we'll see. But I think they'll probably make a late decision on him is my cop-out answer, and that'll probably depend on who comes in as much as who goes out.
Do you think they'll make a late decision on almost all of them in terms of both transfers? But, you know, for instance, what's the Minamino plan? I think they'd probably have a fee now that they'd like to take for Origi, but do you think they're prepared to compromise with it? I still can't work that out with them, because they weren't that eager seemingly to compromise last summer, but there might not have been that much to compromise on, and a lot of what they've done effectively in the past has been around not compromising how they sell. I do wonder if this might be a summer where they just might have to.
Yeah, but then, you know, you made the point halfway through that, Neil, around, well, you know, have you got to, you know, are you able to compromise? You know, have you got, is there something to compromise on? And I think that's, you know, there's been a lot of, I've seen scoffing at the idea that we want £15 million for Harry Wilson, and maybe that was the price last summer and we didn't get it. But if Michael Edwards was being honest with you here, he might have said, well, it took 12 to come in, but no one even came in at that. You know what I mean? And so it's the idea of, you know, who was coming in and what, you know, what bids were we turning down? If we were turning down 8 to 10 million for Harry Wilson last summer, and those sorts of offers are coming in this summer, then I would say, yeah, you probably do need to, you know, lower your expectations a bit. But if sort of no one's, you know, everyone just wants to loan, then what, as you say, Neil, what is the sort of compromise on? I think that there will be fees. I think that they'll be looking for, and I think that's more where the focus will be rather than sort of when. I think they'll have made firm and fast decisions on most of the sort of players we're talking about, if not all, really. I think it's just dependent on what the market's like and who's able to sort of come in. And I think if anything is done late, then I think that'll be more on the buying clubs than it will be on us.
So we all agree they're doing something Neuhausy, if yeah, not literally him. Just quickly, make the prediction. What else are they doing?
I think they'll get a forward.
And nothing at the back.
It really just depends on if Tsimikas goes out. I don't think they'll get another central defender in, but I could be proved wrong and they might decide that they're going to go back for Kabak. I don't know, but I'd be surprised.
I think they were going to do Kabak. They'd have done him.
Yeah.
Although we are stuck, you know, wishing him well every Euros game.
It's nice, isn't it?
It's lovely. It's lovely, yeah. Actually, I think. But it's a bit strange, but it's lovely.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
I do wonder if it might depend on how things go in pre-season. So they might look at, like, Gomez, Matip and...
So just on that, I'll come back to you on that then, therefore. You're saying they'll do a forward. This is sort of where I end up, is that I think that they'd like to do a forward and they'd like to move people on and they'd like to do a forward, but what they might end up doing is looking at where they are on, say, July the 30th, and they might take the money that they might have put onto a forward and put it onto another central defender if they don't have the sports science confidence. That's what I think we're looking at.
I think that's fair as well. You know, we're in kind of a unique position where these players haven't been able to go over to play in the Euros as well, so they're going to be back from day one of pre-season, so they're going to get game time before we start the season proper. And I think if they're not confident that they're going to be able to stand up to the Premier League rigours, so to speak, that they might then decide that they need to go and get somebody else as well.
Going to do something Neuhausy?
Yeah, definitely.
And then what else?
I think we'll do a forward as well. Yeah, I don't think it'll be in the Sancho Mbappe mode. I think it'll be more like your Rafinha or somebody like that. I would love to see Rafinha come in.
You're not bothered about scoring goals?
What?
They're not for you now.
Why? Did he not? He's got a few last season, didn't he?
Single figures, mate. Single figures.
Was it? Right, okay. Well, you know, he's at that age where he can come through and kind of kick on now. But no, I actually don't think they'll do another central defender, because I think you see from a lot of what came out about the club last season, the Matip injury came from, I know Matip's always injured and all that, but it came from him being overplayed and not being able to kind of trust what we had there. I think you've seen Phillips come through and be, I think he he is a fine fifth choice centre half in the context of Van Dijk comes back in and he plays every week and we don't really see him. Let's see what happens with Ben Davies. You know, if he is able to come in and worst comes to worst play 2-3 games in the Premier League, whether he's going to be functional in that. I can't see them doing another one. The only other question for me is how they see Kelleher as a second choice keeper, whether he's ready to come in. And listen, we know Alisson misses 5 to 10 games every Premier League season. You do need to hang your hat on a second choice keeper. I think that's more important for Liverpool than it is for a lot of other top clubs. So I haven't seen enough of Kelleher really to make a decision on that. I think from what I've seen, he's good. I like him. He came in and he did well. But obviously Jürgen watching him and John Achterberg obviously watching him week in, week out and training day in, day out. They can make a decision on him. But that's not very interesting really, is it? So
I think Adrian Stein suggests yeah. that they're happy with Kelleher is too, because I don't think you can buy a keeper mm-hmm. now and then have, you yeah. know, Adrian and Kelleher there as well. And so I think that's maybe a sign to me that they like Kelleher, they see him, you know, long term, you know, as a 2 foot for Liverpool. And it wouldn't surprise me if you see a bit of both of them next season. Kelleher and Adrian on the bench, by the way. You know, I don't want to see, you know, much of either of them in terms of the Premier League, hopefully. You know, if you know Alisson, if you'd offer me, you know, 36 starts next season, I'll bite your hand off. But I think, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if you see, well, you know, Kelleher's playing cup games, but more mm-hmm. often than not, maybe Adrian's on the bench, you know, for sort of Premier League, something like that. So it ends up being a bit of a combination. I think if they weren't sure on number two and wanted to go out and get a higher standard number two, say, I think you'd have to learn Kelleher at that point. And I just don't see them being there at the moment. I think they like him. I think they'd rather have him about. And so I think that's where I end up with the goalkeeper situation.
And where do you end up with everything else?
Neuhaus and I think a forward. I've just got no idea what that forward looks like, or even sort
what
of.
What would you like it to look like?
I'd like a nine. I'd like someone whose preference yeah. is to play number nine. Obviously,
you heard about this massive Serb.
I have. Yeah. He's interesting, isn't he? I think the you know, obviously versatility helps any footballer, but especially, you know, sort of get games at Liverpool. But I'd like him to his preference to be a nine, and if he can offer something slightly different, then great. I just can't see them going very high on there unless they can do something well, unless they're throwing a lot of sixes in the selling. I can't see them scores are going really high, and obviously Mbappe's coming in next summer as well, so you've got to bear that in mind.
You don't want to get carried away, do you? Yeah, you've got to leave yourself that flexibility. Excellent stuff. All right then, thank you very much indeed to Philippa, to Andy and to John. It has been this week's Anfield Wrap, loads of other fantastic stuff, looking at the squad as it is now, coming as John said before, other bits and pieces as well. And yesterday we walked 24 miles for the Mumbai supporters club, who were supporting a woman run kitchen and food bank out of Mumbai. Do check out our, what's the link, I suppose it will be, yes, that's what it'll be, in order to raise money for that particular charity. It was a long day, but we did it. We made it all in one piece. It was bleak, the bit between Bootle FC and Goodison Park, but then, as ever, leaving Goodison Park, the sun began to shine. Easier. Hope you've enjoyed this. Do subscribe to the Anfield Wrap. Do download our app, whatever it takes. Thank you very much indeed. Philippa Smallwood, Andy Bell and John Gibbons. It has been the Anfield Wrap. Sports Social Podcast Network.